You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So Panay is a collision of Filipino family migrant stories, inclusive of the people that they've met in Aotearoa and how all of those personal conflicts relates to the geological politics that face this family, inclusive of Mount Pinatubo eruption in the Philippines in 1991, connecting to the earthquakes in Christchurch in 2010 and 11. So we're talking about topics of migration, assimilation, intersectionality, and how a family works and what people have to do to adapt and change for the people they love.
Sounds like a multi-generational story.
Yeah, definitely it is. And I think a lot of like 1.5 generation or second generation migrant kids will really relate to it. It deals with the pressures from the multiple sides that you're expected to kind of adhere to as that kind of generation.
And because the story talks about this weird generational gap where we don't really hear from, it's either we hear from the first or the second and third. It's a really cool way to introduce a universal topic where not just specifically Filipino 1.5 gen can relate to. It's migrants and people who feel othered or that they don't belong or they have to adjust to a certain way to find their tribe and their whānau, I think will definitely relate and connect to the story.
It's essentially, it's pretty much a story about a migrant family finding out a way to carve a space for themselves in this new land that they've moved to and how that sort of affects their relationships with their friends and each other.
Yeah. Who is the 1.5 generation?
Me? No.
What does that look like?
Well, that's the thing, is what does that look like? That's the kind of question that we want to ask. I personally feel like there's no one definition of it. There's no rule book to how to be a Filipino Kiwi. You know, how much of each do you have? How much of each do you honor? What does it mean? Like, does that just mean you eat fish and chips with rice? What's going on? Like, but yeah, that's sort of the question that I want to explore, is like, what does it mean to be that? If you're in that situation, what do you do when you're lost or you're confused or you're feeling ostracized or you don't fit in? There is no guidebook and you're just kind of on your own.
And it's that conversation of the in-between, which is always, I find, really hard because the conversation of neither here nor there either causes a sense of flexibility and liberty, but also a massive sense of, I'm so undefined, therefore do I exist?
I know this play is semi-autobiographical.
Who told you that?
who said?
Yeah, how's that process been?
It's been a mix of revealing healed wounds. It's also been very therapeutic in a sense of getting your thoughts and reflections down on page. And then even more exciting to see it be explored by other people and have it strike up new, fresh conversations with a new group of people outside of what I have in my head, essentially. But yeah, it is semi-autobiographical and I'm quite proud of that because it showed a lot of complexities of, yeah, what it meant for me to belong or to find my sense of acceptance in my new environment, as well as in the family that have always known me. And it is very much about my connection to the land. And I know I wasn't around when Pinatubo erupted, but my mum did, so I used a whole lot of childhood stories that I would hear, and I honoured those memories that was passed down to me as a mere observer or as a listener to those stories. And then, yeah, I lived through the Christchurch earthquakes and all the challenges that had caused and shifted in relationships in the community.
Do you find that there's like a certain cathartic element to doing a show like this?
Absolutely. I think, if anything, the only thing that I was really apprehensive about in terms of reliving something like a catastrophe, like an earthquake, was reliving the sounds. Not necessarily writing it down and being able to talk about it openly and really open it up for myself, but it was more being in the rehearsal room and hearing the replica of what a rumble sounds like. So that was more the thing I was embracing myself for.
I wanted to ask on how you guys are navigating, I guess, the relationship between tangata whenua and tauiwi. Because I've read that you're incorporating elements of kapahaka, of waiata into the play. So how's that process been?
It was super important for me to acknowledge the main character's connection to Te Ao Māori, to Aotearoa, and tangata whenua, because for me personally, in terms of the inspiration of what made me conceive the show, was my relationship with the land and what was it about New Zealand as a fresh migrant teenager, what is it in New Zealand that can make me feel like this can be a place where I can be comfortable? Mm. And the first thing that I gravitated to when I was 11 was the music and the soundscape and the vowels of Te Reo Māori. The first thing that I felt comfortable in to include myself in school activities or extracurricular activities was kapahaka, and it was waiata because it sounded familiar to me, the a, e, I, o, u's. And, you know, just seeing other people who look like me, another brown person in the room, I was like, cool, there is some sort of spot for me here, and I could dance. So I wirried and I takahied and instantly had a group of friends. Instantly I was like, yeah, I can sound like that.
Yeah.
And for a young child in a space that I had no one to represent me or to show me this is how to be here as an Asian brown person,
yeah.
I had to go to the closest thing. And the Māori friends that I had in my younger years, they were very, you know, their spiritual connection to the land was something I could connect to in comparison to, you know, a religious tribal community.
It goes back to the idea of like trying to carve out a space for you to belong. Mm. And, you know, when you come here, especially when you migrate to Christchurch, you're not a lot of brown people there. Yeah. So I think, and this kind of happens in lots of different ways. Like this is one version. I know that I've had a lot of brown friends or friends who have migrated here who gravitate to hip hop because it's like the only depiction of what they look like, the closest thing they could find in the media. So I think that kind of goes back to the idea of just finding a place for you to be who you are. And so you gravitate to the closest thing. But I think for me, I mean, obviously I grew up in New Zealand and I grew up around like Māori culture and kapahaka and the connection with tangata whenua, but I don't think I had as strong a connection personally as Marianne did as the author of the play. So for me, because I really just started to realize in my early 20s onwards that, man, this is an important thing to acknowledge and to be a part of in your life. So it's still an ongoing thing where I'm looking for where I belong in that world, you know? And so this show is actually really great because it's another way for me to learn as much as I can and take in as much as I can about the culture, so, you know, speak as much te reo as I can on the floor and learn words. And because I think the question is, how do you take the thing and not appropriate it within your show? So I think if you approach it with a deep sense of respect for it, and if you come from it with a sense of sensitivity
of honesty.
And honesty and rawness to it, that kind of takes you away from the risk of like kind of bastardizing the thing, you know, and an openness too. So if I do something wrong, if I say something wrong, then an openness to go, okay, my bad, let me
check
try
myself,
better,
yeah,
you know, because I think that kind of stops it from walking the line of like dodgy fusion food,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean?
Man, I hate fusion food.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, that's what I want to do as a director, is make sure that it's really honest and respectful.
Yeah, I wanted to ask on the choice of word of assimilation. How what does that mean to the play? Because I've heard conversations around the importance of integrating rather than assimilating.
Mm.
So
I chose the word assimilating because I think there's a sense of, there's certain choices you can make on what you can adapt. And I, as a young migrant in the country, I was like, cool, I can see the saying words weird, the accent, it's not American, what is this, what's going on, it's not British either. Mm-hmm. So there were certain moments where I chose to adapt, and there were certain things that I was like, I just have to for survival. I just have to switch my way of thinking because I can't keep holding on to a culture or to a certain way of being in a country that it's not recognised in or that it's not necessarily the norm. And especially growing up in Christchurch, it was very hard to go to school with like a, you know, rice and tuyo for lunch. Like, I think I go back to food because, you know, rice and tuyo is such a basic, like, poor man's delicious, luxurious food.
Yeah.
But if you bring that to school in Christchurch, everyone's gonna be like, what is that smelly fish dish? Why are you eating rice for lunch? Have a burger, have chips. And it's like, okay, I will have lunch with you and I'll just have fish and chips. And then slowly you see, whether you choose or not, as you live through it, purely by the sense that your environment is different, you just sort of mold and you sort of change and
Yeah, I feel like, I think for me, the way I see the word assimilation kind of implies like a self-erasure of like what you were before to adapt, to learn something new in the new place that you've moved into. And I agree. I think like I think at the moment it is important, I think, to integrate rather than assimilate, because you don't want to erase yourself. But the harsh truth is that a lot of people do. And I did that when I was a teenager. And it's only now in my 20s that I realized the importance of actually not assimilating but integrating and holding on to both and going, have both, you know, and you are both by default. So I think it wouldn't be truthful if we didn't have that in there somewhere, because I think that is still a story that happens. So that's what we want to show, because I think that when you, if you see the show, there are choices that certain characters make that you go, oh, they did that. Like they're kind of erasing part of themselves. And it's not a judgment on them, but it's just what you have to do to survive, like Maria
said. And it's a beginning of a conversation, because I think through this process and even through rehearsals and conversations within the cast, you see what is actually an assimilation, what is actually a resonance of one culture and another, and what is then intersectionalized and integrated into either culture, of like the Maori culture. And often we have these conversations with like, oh, we do that here too. So we have a cast member, Machu Himawera, and he was like, oh, we do the exact same thing.
And I was there's like, so many, we do
so
that
many
too.
Overlaps, and I find little joys in that, as well as, oh, do you really do that?
Because it's like a shared humanity. And even like with the Maori culture, but even like, you know, like Lucas, who's like, he's like the only white cast member in the group, like he'll have moments of like, oh, yo, I recognize that. And I think,
well, I've seen that, like,
yeah, I've
at
seen
school.
That. Yeah. So I think,
and it's that recognition.
Yeah, it's that kind of allows the whole story to be universal and accessible, and not just for people who are, do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. My final question I wanted to ask was on Asian representation. And so is it fair to say theatre is changing from being middle class and white?
I think Asians are doing really well at the moment at creating their own spaces in the theatre landscape. I don't know if in terms of representation on like the more
mainstream
plays and theatre, I don't know if it's quite there yet. It's starting to. Like, you saw ATC this year put on A Fine Balance, which was a play originally put on by Prius, which is a huge step for ATC, because that's the main theatre company, and a lot of their patrons are like, you know, a lot older and mostly white. Let's call a spade a spade. But I think it's a big step that they did that. However, it's still like a brown show. Do you know what I mean? Like, how about you just get some brown homies in the brown people in like your play about or how about you, let's not stage plays about the Queen. Like, what's going down with that? Like, so, you know, so I think it's starting to, but there's ways to go yet, you know? I think what's exciting in those spaces that I was talking about with Asian theatre practitioners is they're making work that isn't just one note, like isn't just one thing. Like, for example, you've got us, Proudly Asian Theatre, we've got this show, and then we kind of strive to make like contemporary theatre. Then you've got Alice, who with White Mess, and she makes like kind of avant-garde kind of experimental stuff. So I think that's really exciting, that there's different voices coming through, you know?
And I think as a producer, one of the things that I definitely notice in terms of doing a show like this, we're very aware that we're tapping into a community that may not necessarily go see theatre, because maybe there's for them there might be a connotation that
a preconception of
Who can go see theatre, who can afford see theatre. So even now, even just talking to friends, I phrase my marketing plugs differently. It's at the Basement Theatre. I have to say where it is, because most Filipinos, they'll be like, what basement? I was like, Basement Theatre.
Yeah, so my mom's basement.
Yeah. But you do want to be like, this is, I'm trying to reach out to a specific group of people, as well as everyone come see the show.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm necessarily going to be like, hey, Pakeha crew, come check it out.
It's the eternal struggle. So like as a performer, a solo performer myself, it's the struggle of how do you market your show wide enough so it's accessible to the majority, but really tell the people that you made it for that it's for them.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.